I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. George W. Bush raised a few eyebrows on the campaign trail by naming Jesus Christ his favorite philosopher. And Al Gore's running mate Joe Lieberman has been ruffling some feathers with his personal piety, too. Yet, by and large, the Bible thumping on the campaign trail this year is probably an unremarkable manifestation of America's nearly universal religiosity, both private and public. The forgotten silent minority are the atheists in our midst. Our guest Warren Smith has made it his mission to shed light on the mostly private beliefs of thousands of these non-God-fearing folk and on the philosophies that underlie their thinking. From Napoleon to Warren Buffett, Warren Smith has spent 50 years outing famous agnostics right and left. The result is a work of biblical proportions entitled Who's Who in Hell? A Handbook and International Directory for Humanists, Freethinkers, Naturalists, Rationalists, and Non-Theists. Warren Smith himself is a long-lapsed Methodist from Iowa. He's a humanist and a self-described Sybarite and roué. We're talking about who's who in hell this hour. Connection listeners, might you be in the book? Who would be on your list? Are you a non-believer? Do you want to volunteer your name to Warren Smith for a second edition? How do you describe your favorite flavor of non-belief? 1-800-423-8255. Well, 1-800-423-TALK makes the agnostic connection. Warren Smith, welcome. What in God's name were you thinking of when you put this book together?
Well, that's a good question, but God wasn't a part of it.
How do you know that?
Well, actually, my God has been a Macintosh. When I bought that Macintosh computer 10 years ago, I started inserting all kinds of tidbits about philosophy, and it just grew and grew. And
maybe the devil constructed that work for your idle hands. Who knows?
Well, you're bringing up terms which really are not in the philosophy world. And I know why you're doing it, but still, with 6 billion people, there are only one-third of them who are Christians. The other two-thirds are not. So the other two-thirds haven't really been getting a good press for centuries. And
you certainly, I'll grant you this, you make it enormously interesting and entertaining. This is such a huge book. I'm deep in the S's, you know, in your alphabetical order. But I'm noticing Arthur Schlesinger Jr., for example. Arthur Schopenhauer, that's no surprise. All sorts of interesting S folk in the book. Start anywhere you like and just give us some sketches of these people.
Okay, when I started...
And then we'll make the connections among them.
When I started putting things into the computer, it was easier to do it by A to Z listing. So when Santayana wrote to me, I obviously put it under that. Incidentally, under S, that letter that he wrote me from a Catholic convent in Italy usually has not been available until this came out. And I have correspondence from Thomas Mann and
yeah, this
and
is
John
a remarkable,
Steinbeck.
Yeah.
I have it from just numerous people. And until the book came out, this simply hasn't been known. But I did write to Santayana when I was a student at Columbia, and I suggested that because he was recuperating in a Catholic convent, that perhaps he no longer in philosophy was a naturalist. And, oh, he was furious. He wrote back a beautiful letter, which was included in his collected letters.
Would you read from that section?
Yes. For example, he said, can I find it fast? I'm back on page
965. I'm looking right at it.
I think listeners might be interested in knowing this is something like the Columbia Encyclopedia. It's huge. It weighs 6 pounds. And Santayana said that But it's difficult to find this fast. Those professors at Columbia who tell you that in my idea of Christ in the Gospels, I incline to theism, have not read that book sympathetically. They forget that my naturalism is fundamental. So really what I'm doing here is incorporating views on naturalism as contrasted with supernaturalism. See, the believers are the ones who are into supernaturalism. The doubters are the ones who are into naturalism. According to a rationalist, you cite the natural sciences and the physical sciences when you're trying to answer questions. You certainly wouldn't go into theology to determine when the world was created and what's going to happen tomorrow. But you're asking me about the S's? Oh, they're all kind of, I see on the page opposite from Santayana, the Portuguese winner of the Nobel Prize, José Saramago. And that brings up the fact that Narcy May Sarton, she was a Unitarian. I include the Unitarians along with the other freethinkers because they don't have a creed that they recite and say. So each one...
People joke about Unitarians believing in one God at the most.
Yeah, or they believe in up to one God.
Yeah.
and that, I think, is very true. Then next I see Sartre. He would be an atheistic humanist. There are many, of course, who are humanists who are not atheistic, by which I mean they don't like the word atheism. A means not. Theism means believer in God. So that's a little like telling a baseball player that in rugby you have goal posts. So why in baseball don't you have goal posts? In the world of philosophy, you don't talk about angels and gods and grace and salvation and all those theological inventions. You talk about small g gods, but not capital G God.
You have also among your S's one of my favorite writers, William Saroyan,
yes,
who died about 20 years ago, great
yes.
Armenian writer from Fresno, California. Mm-hmm. And he gave you an interesting answer to a direct inquiry. Shall I read it?
Yes.
He ended up saying he didn't entirely buy the whole question. He said, I think living is an animal event, although the animal has become quite sophisticated, artistic, cunning, and or phony, etc. He says, I think man's soul has been probed so deeply and humorlessly that all of the probing has become boring and virtually meaningless. It appears to be this probing that is a substitute for actual living or an escape from a sense of guilt, etc. But then he ended up saying, I'm opposed to the latter four kinds of humanism you mentioned, theistic humanism, atheistic humanism, communistic humanism, naturalistic humanism. He said, I'm glad I didn't write any of the books you mentioned. I'm glad I wrote the ones I wrote. And I wish you every success because I expect that will make you glad.
This was really typical Saroyan.
He talked
that way. And I don't know what his physician would say as to why he had this kind of personality. But at any rate, notice that he does not receive bold-faced print. I put him in little print, meaning I did include the borderline cases, such as Saroyan, and in the same area, there are other borderline cases. I see Satanism, for example. That has nothing to do with rationalism or humanism. It's just that when, like in rugby and in baseball, when they're arguing the relative merits of each sport, the theist is liable to accuse the non-theist of being a Satanist. Well, if you're a non-theist, you don't know who Satan is. This is an invention of the theologians.
Warren Smith, what were you doing when you put this thing together? Were you looking for company, so to speak, in disbelief?
No, not really. I was Raised a Methodist. As soon as I left home, I was able to shuck the religious baggage. But then you have to put something in that place. So the ethics, the morality, that still continued. Meaning, some people think that non-theists are unethical and they're immoral. And that's really, it's not playing cricket with your opponents to do that.
Would you grant, I mean, I want to get into this question of sort of what makes a non-believer, but I also want to say that it's always seemed to me, and it goes right back to the gospel, that doubt is a part of belief, and maybe belief is a part of doubt. I mean, but they go together, you know, the doubting Thomas sort of
speaks. Well, you see, I know what you're talking about because I was raised a Methodist, but I left all that kind of thinking, and now I'm a skeptic, yes, even about my own views. I am incredulous. And
you don't even believe in what you don't believe in.
No, no, no. What I'm saying is that today I believe what today I believe. And as Emerson said, change your mind. Tomorrow, if you change, if you find out new facts, you change your mind. Every day when I read the New York Times, I look for new information from the Hubble telescope so that if they find a new galaxy out there, well, I change my mind. So I'm constantly skeptical.
Brother Hubble is in your book, is he not?
Oh, yes, he's a, I hate to use the word saint, but he is certainly one of the inspiring people. The astronomers particularly are inspiring, and I have a listing at the end of the book of the various occupations, and I notice under astronomers, well, it goes clear back to, there are many in ancient Greece, for example, who knew that the world was round. But there's Halley, there's Fred Hoyle, there's Edwin Hubble, Carl Sagan, of course, and Harlow Shapley. Sagan, by the way, is my idea of an inspiring non-believer.
Why?
Well, for example, at the there was a memorial for him in, of all places, St. John's Cathedral. And Al Gore and others came and mentioned that they knew that Sagan was an atheist. I'm sure Sagan wouldn't call himself an atheist. He might say he's a non-theist, or he doesn't use those terms. But they respected him because of his knowledge. And after the, it was like a one-hour memorial service. And the cathedral was just filled. And the punch was that at the very end, his voice came out over the speakers. Now, I think some of the theists may have felt that there was a resurrection, but in the world of rationalism, we don't believe in resurrection.
Your index by professions is utterly fascinating. Carrie Fisher, Jane Fonda, Jodie Foster, John Gielgud. The musicians, you have Beethoven on your non-believer list. You have the writer, Peter Abbott and all that, Beatrix Potter, P.G. Woodhouse, the humorist, Russell Baker, the New York Times columnist, Van Wyck Brooks, the critic, Alan Nevins, Francis Parkman, the historian, Edward Sorel, James Thurber, the famous writer and New Yorker cartoonist. What in the world do these people have in common, do you suppose? Besides,
they're all searchers, meaning they're looking for truths. That's in the plural, not truth with a capital T. For example, there are like 30 Nobel Prize winners also.
I suspect there are even more. But what is it? Searchers, surely there are religious searchers for truth, too. I mean, why? I mean, it would seem to me that there's a basic human impulse to believe, and there's probably a basic human impulse to to doubt and disbelieve, and for a great many people, it's a kind of a lifelong conversation. But why do people fall on one side or the other, do you think?
Well, I think they have been, I hate to use the word brainwashed, but they've been taught as youths that such and such is the truth, with a capital T, and they don't like to go against the establishment on this. And meanwhile, the media and their teachers, the world around them seems to support this view. There are, however, particularly on college campuses, people who are not interested in finding the truth. They're interested in searching for truths. And that, to me, is the reason that I was able to find over 10,000 people easily. And by the way, these are worldwide listings. For example, you mentioned Jane Fonda just now. Well, in the late 1990s, she was a non-believer. I've heard recently that she has changed over. She left Ted Turner. Turner, by the way, feels that religion
is the God that failed, so to speak.
Yeah, it's for losers. I guess by Jane's shucking Turner, she also shucked her non-belief. And that's perfectly all right. And I do have a section here on theists.
Should there be an asterisk after her name in your book?
No. What I'll need to do now is to bring this up to date in some other revision. And I would really appreciate suggestions of people who should be included and who weren't. I mean, I only have 10,000. Let's get 20,000.
It'll have to be two volumes. This is like the Oxford English Dictionary, this huge book. But that's why we have connection callers to add to your file and maybe to put their own names in there. Connection listeners, what about it? What is the border between belief and disbelief? Can you cross it? Have you been on both sides? What makes the difference? 1-800-423-8255 joins the Who's Who in Hell connection with the compiler, Warren Allen Smith. 1-800-423-TALK. Ernie is on the line.
Yes, hi. You can put me and my wife in hell along with the others. I want to congratulate you, first of all, on giving the atheist point of view a long been neglected a chance to express itself. We have several friends who are atheists, but you know they're afraid to come out of the closet. The word atheist has been associated with communism and immorality and just has a bad odor, so they will call themselves anything else. And also, atheists are, I think, the last minority in the country to be really discriminated against in a big way. They can't serve on juries in some states. You can't even get yourself elected as a dog catcher if you say you're an atheist. There is a tremendous... And I think the country is headed, we think, the country is headed into a theocracy, where the minority, especially the minority of the irreligious, people who just don't believe in it, are going to face more and more pressures, more and more discrimination. We think that the more and more there's an intrusion of religion into government, and you know, I can go on and on, but I think...
Is it a fact, Ernie, that you can be stricken from a jury list for non-belief? How does the question get raised?
I think there's at least one state, I think your speaker probably knows more about this than I do, but there's at least one state, and maybe several, where if you're unwilling to take an oath on the Bible, you can't serve. And a good atheist with integrity would not do that.
I want to see the evidence on that, Ernie, but it's an interesting point.
Arkansas
interesting if true, as we say.
Pardon?
Go ahead. I say we'll file that under interesting if true. Go ahead.
Yeah, all right. Well, I would like to, I would like to ask your speaker, if it is not possible that we have a finite mind in an infinite universe, we cannot imagine anything without a beginning, so we stick a God out there. Nobody says how the God begins, but we have to have something out there to explain things. We cannot live in uncertainty. We cannot live in the fear that maybe when we die we stop like a clock. We go to the same place that the bugs and the birds and the bees go.
There's a man looking for truths or truth
Ernie was absolutely beautiful, lucid, inspiring. Wish I could talk as humbly and also as eloquently as he has.
Well, file it under E. Thank you, Ernie. 1-800-423-8255 makes the non-believer connection. Steve is calling from Pocatello, Idaho. Welcome, Steve.
Hi. Hey, I really love your show, and I always do. I would like to, right after I saw that Albert Einstein had been chosen Person of the Century by Time magazine, I looked up a couple of quotes, knowing that, you know, he started his life in the Jewish faith and became a well-known socialist and then an atheist. And here, I just like to read two short quotes from him first, and then I have a question for you. Here's his first quote. Man would indeed be in a poor way if he had to be restrained by fear of punishment and hope of reward after death. And then he says, I cannot conceive of a God who rewards and punishes his creatures or has a will of the kind that we experience in ourselves. Neither can I nor would I want to conceive of an individual that survives his physical death. Now, you know, again, this is our, you know, person of the century, at least by Time magazine, but I think we'd all agree that Einstein pretty much was on the ball.
Henry Luce thought he was God, but...
I have a question, which is really one of the greatest questions I've ever had for anyone, and you would be the perfect person to answer it. I have noticed that almost all Muslim children are born to Muslim parents, and almost all Catholic children are born to Catholic parents. We could go ad infinitum through all religions, and 99% of all children who are born of a faith are born of the same faith as their parents. Don't you find this an extreme coincidence? Thank you very much.
Yes, I do, and I think you were eloquent also. Einstein, I quote, on pages 325 to 327, he has a lot of observations to make that appeal to all kinds of humanists, and you've quoted the essence of what he has said. Many people assume that a person whose name is Einstein or Bernstein or whatever are Jewish. In the book, I distinguish between Hebrews and Jews and cultural Jews. For example, Mrs. Albright, the ambassador, apparently is a Christian. However, her ancestors were Hebrews, so she's not a Jew. Sammy Davis, on the other hand, was a Jew, but he wasn't a Hebrew. So I do make those changes in the book.
Won't you concede that the question of Einstein's religion is a lot more obscure and complicated than dismissal of a personal God? I mean, he was a very... I don't know. I just don't want to let that go as the last word on
Brother Einstein. The only thing is, Chris, you keep bringing up God, and that has nothing to do with Einstein. Einstein's view
Einstein,
is...
I didn't bring up God. Yeah. Einstein was always bringing up God, and he was always trying to think through the nature of the universe as God would have made it. I mean, God was very... had a sort of speaking part in his life and in his mind.
All right, well, you're taking the theistic view, and that's perfectly all right, but a rationalist wouldn't do that, and that's why...
No, I'm just remembering what I've read of Einstein over the years.
Well, I agree that you're remembering what you have read of Einstein. In my book, I have given the viewpoint closer to Ernie's and the viewpoint... of the man from Idaho. Incidentally, Idaho, I list on page 563. I have included by state the various atheist, humanist, free thought, rationalist chapters, not only by state, but also by country. Yeah. So if you're looking for Nepal, oh, they've got a big humanist group. If you're looking for Amsterdam or the Netherlands, at least a fourth of the Dutch are humanists. If you're looking for Norway, you'd be amazed at the numbers there that are non-theistic. And it's just that they look at us from Europe and from Africa and other parts of the world as if we're nuts. We're all into religion over here. We talk about God. If you're at the United Nations and you're trying to solve problems, well, God is discussed. From a rationalistic viewpoint, it just makes no sense.
So what do humanists talk about?
They talk about environmentalism, the problems of human the population explosion. We have 6 billion people. We should have closer to 2 billion. They talk about love. They talk about ethics. And the basic philosophic views, for example, of aesthetics, of ethics, of morality, of epistemology. That's a big word which simply means how we know about the nature of knowledge.
Hold the thought for a moment. We're talking about atheism, non-belief, in a very pious culture we live in, with Warren Allen Smith, who has compiled 10,000 names, a who's who in hell. We'll be back. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're working our way through Warren Smith's voluminous catalog of 10,000 non-believers in our world, in our culture, in our history. Warren Smith, I see you've got my long-lost cousin, Johnny Rotten Lydon of the Sex Pistols, in here. He said in the liner notes of his record, Cruel, in 1992, he said, "Where is God? I see no evidence of God. God is probably Barry Manilow." But you've also got Barry Manilow in here saying he was asked if he believed in God, and he replied, "Yes, his name is Clive Davis, and he's the head of my record company." Our phone is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about who's who in hell, about a long and persistent tradition of non-belief, atheism, agnosticism, humanism, rationalism, free thinking. There's so many names for it. And we probably ought to distinguish what people mean by these different names, Warren Smith. Do you want to give us a quick sort of guide to the names of what you're talking about? Warren Smith.
The umbrella word that I like to use is free thinker. If you're a free thinker, it means that you look at any subject without being hobbled by your past viewpoints. You're continually searching, so that included in that group would be the Epicureans, the Sophists, the Deists, the Transcendentalists, the Naturalists in philosophy. I mentioned some of the Unitarians, but I like the word free thinker because it sort of encompasses all these various views. Now, the theists, you know, the majority here in the States, are more apt to call this group atheistic. And I think a real atheist would obviously object. On the other hand, the Quakers used to be called Quaker, and they finally have accepted that. I have no compunction about saying I'm an atheist. I'm also an A Oregonian. I'm an A vegetarian. I'm an A lots of things, meaning it's no way to describe a person by saying what he is not.
It's very interesting how it softens and changes the meaning just to call somebody an atheist as opposed to an
atheist.
Yeah. George Carlin did have a lot of fun with that.
Right.
Well, George Carlin, of course, is in the book, and he has some delightful things to say about the believers. Even some of which I could even mention, I think. He calls it in the bullshit department, a businessman can't hold a candle to a clergyman. And also the freethinkers generally object to the fact that theists have arranged with the establishment for tax exemptions. Now, why should those of us who are not believers have to carry the tax load of all these various organizations that have become corporations and they've gotten around the tax laws?
George Carlin reminds me, I didn't realize that there was such a sort of robust sense of humor among atheists. George Carlin's a special case because he's surely the world's most famous graduate of the Cardinal Hayes High School in the Bronx, and he talks about that experience all the time.
Now, you mentioned humor. Can you name anything in the Bible that's funny? I can't.
It's not generally considered a humor text, but so what?
Well,
Neither is War and Peace or...
Well, but why would people be attracted to such a book? The Kama Sutra is a lot more fun to read. But one thing I really should point out here is that I'm talking about hell, and I'm also talking about hell. I'm talking about hell with a capital H. That's simply a theological invention, nothing else. There's no capital H hell. Now, there is a small h hell in our minds. That is, if you could see the traffic problem in New York City today, it's hell. But that's with a small h.
1-800-423-8255 makes the Who's Who in Hell connection with the cataloger of it all, Warren Smith. 1-800-423-TALK. Mujed is on the line.
Yes, hi.
Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I would like to contribute to the discussion about the reasons some people might become believers or non-believers. I am a lecturer at Boston University in psychology, and the thing is that there is some evidence that there are some biological basis, genetic basis for faith in some kind of superpower. If we go,
is it useful in evolutionary terms?
Yes, and if we go throughout all cultures all around the world, in primitive cultures or more civilized cultures, we'll find that people believe in some kind of superpower. It can be a god, it can be a spirit, it can be a state, a government. And the thing is that it seems that this is something moving people in that direction. This is, of course, can be taken by believers as evidence that God put it to make people believe in God, or non-believers can take it as a sign that it's just biological. So it depends on the eye of the beholder. And
two questions, Mujed. Is there a belief gene? And secondly, does it increase your chances of survival to have a strong belief?
The first thing, is there a belief gene? I think there's still much further research needed to reach that point, but there is one thing, is the awareness of people of their weaknesses. That's what make people have the desire to move toward something to protect them and to give them some power. So this biological tendency to be aware of our own limits and our own, weaknesses can move people toward something bigger than them.
Warren Smith, do you want to comment?
Yes, I think he is giving a viewpoint that I try to cover in the various listings in the book. The only thing is, my book is not a scholarly tome that's going to appeal to Boston University philosophers. It's more the kind of a book that Eric Hoffer would write on the subject. That is, I'm more interested in thinking of this as a layman would think. And I'm really a layman. I was a teacher of English, and I had a recording studio. So I'm not a professional philosopher. And when I talk with a psychologist who has these theories, I'm all ears. I'm searching for truths, and I find that very interesting, what he said. By the way, there are quite a few psychiatrists in the book. Psychiatrists love theists, because the theists have been told that about guilt, and so you feel guilty about things, and it eventually gets to you, and therefore you end up on the psychiatrist's couch. But the psychiatrists themselves, and I'm talking about even Janet Asimov, Isaac's wife, and, well, Freud and Fromm and Ernest Jones, Carl Menninger, Albert Ellis is another psychologist.
Where do you put Jung?
Jung is in the other camp. He would be in very small print. You'll need your magnifying glasses to pick him out.
1-800-423-8255 joins the conversation, or you can get us on our website too at theconnection1word.org. 1-800-423-TALK is the phone way. Richard is on the line.
Good morning.
Hello, Richard.
Thank you very much for having this topic. It's long overdue.
Okay.
And Mr. Smith, I was wondering if either of you had seen the ABC This Week program a few months back when Jesse Ventura was interviewed by Cokie Roberts, and he talked at some length about how his wife is very much a believer and gets a lot of things from it, but he himself simply doesn't need it. And
didn't he say it's for sissies or something?
No, at least on this particular program, he wasn't the least bit insulting or disparaging. He was just honestly saying that it wasn't something that he wanted or had any need for. Hmm. And I found this an absolutely remarkable kind of statement from a prominent American politician. I'm wondering if your book, Mr. Smith, has anyone else remotely like that in politics.
Well, I turn to page 1134, and Jesse said, organized religion is a sham and a crutch for weak-minded people who need strength in numbers. It tells people to go out and stick their noses in other people's business. Now, he lives, of course, in the Midwest. Having come from the Midwest, I know what he is talking about, because you know everyone's religion. You even know when they went to the hospital, what their problems are. He had an interview in Playboy. That was in November 1999. And that's the value, I think, of the book, too. I do cite where people like Ventura would speak out. There aren't many other people in American politics who dare to speak out the way he has. Now, up in Canada, it's quite different. They're not nearly so theistic-minded. There is one member of parliament who is gay and an atheist. And you couldn't imagine that here in the States.
Richard, thank you. 1-800-423-8255, the non-belief connection. Elizabeth is on the line.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. This is a fascinating book, and if no one in my family beats me to it, I'll be getting it to my dad for his birthday. I found myself in the unique position of having been raised a Unitarian Universalist by two lapsed Methodists, and upon reaching my adult life, finding that that was kind of a two-edged sword. I find myself with a hole spiritually in my life, but also being raised a Unitarian has given me the tools and the free thinking skills to go out and look for my own answers. So I find myself in this sort of in-between world, which is very awkward in this, as you point out, increasingly theist-based world, where I'm kind of one foot in each camp and not quite sure where to go.
Interesting. Don't go away, Elizabeth.
Okay.
Do you want to pointer, Warren Smith?
Yes, yes. You bring up the word spirituality, and those who are Unitarians, and I'm thinking of Kurt Vonnegut and Arthur Schlesinger, that's the way he pronounces the name, they are spiritual, but they don't use that theological invention. They're more apt to talk about aesthetics, and you get your uplift through drama, through poetry, through music, through architecture. In other words, the humanities. This is what inspires. And they don't use the word spiritual or spirituality. It's something you can't put your finger on. But you can put your finger on the beauty of an Arthur Miller play or a Shakespearean drama and the music of, we'll say, Virgil Thompson.
What about Beethoven, speaking of great music?
Well, I have a whole section on him. I don't memorize these because there, as you mentioned, there are so many. But what I found, too, is that all the big names are claimed by all the camps. I mean, if you're a communist, well, you look to see if maybe Beethoven was a communist. But in my section on Beethoven, I notice that I cite several people. Now, Alexander Cockburn in The Nation, for example, has some new ideas on Beethoven. But I couldn't find that Beethoven was theistic at all. He may have been deistic. Now, here's an interesting borderline case. The deists believed, and I'm talking now about the founding fathers, that sure, there was a creation, but the creator left and is no longer available. Mm. So they sort of skirted the question. Yes, there was a creator, but we can't know any more except through our senses. So in other words, we developed courses like agriculture and astronomy and the various academic disciplines. But you don't pray to this creator. Prier in French means to beg. And why people like to pray is beyond a rationalist. Why should you beg for something? But Beethoven, I'm pretty sure, is completely in the non-theistic camp, if you include the deists.
Well, that's a big if. In your own section on Beethoven, you quote him 10 days before his death, writing to a friend that he accepted his fate and only constantly pray to God that his holy will may ordain that while thus condemned to suffer death in life, I may be shielded from want. The Almighty will give me strength to endure my lot, however severe and terrible, with resignation to his will. That sounds like a theist to me, but we don't have to argue it.
You know, that section on Beethoven is so long that I can't find it.
Not to worry. Lots of more folk want to engage you here. 1-800-423-TALK is our phone. Gwen is on the line.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome, Gwen.
Thanks for taking my call. I wonder if Mr. Smith could help me answer a question that my 7-year-old son has been asking me of late, which is, what are we? By which he means, you know, where does he fit in with, you know, his friends who are Jewish or Episcopalian? A lot of his cousins are Catholic and so on. And so we don't go to church, and we're all sort of different in this household. I tell him that he can be, it's up to him to decide what he wants to be. And then to try to explain to him what I am is my question to you. I like the word free thinker, but I imagine everybody wants to think of himself as a free thinker. One of my favorite thinkers says, Daniel Quinn says, I don't know the number of the gods. It could be zero. It could be one. It could be any number above one. But I think of myself as a seeker of both truths, with a small t, as you put it, and that those might add up to a capital T truth. I looked up agnostic, which the definition I found said that you believe that any ultimate truth, as in God, is unknowable. And I don't even know if I know if it's knowable. So I guess beyond free thinker, do you have any... I guess maybe I'm an atheist if I don't... I'm sure I don't believe in a God who in whose image humans are made. But I'm trying to narrow it down a little bit for my son.
A searcher, for sure. Gwen, thank you.
Gwen, you're typical of so many throughout the country. If we're in this minority, what do we call ourselves? I don't know what state you're in, what part of the country you're in. They're usually Unitarian groups. That's a good place to for your son to find other kids his age. There are humanist chapters throughout the country, and there you will find kids his age. They have summer camps and so forth. There are two major humanist organizations. One is the American Humanist Association. It's in Buffalo, New York. Ironically, the other one is also in Buffalo, and it's called the Council for Secular Humanism. Now, it's difficult to go to any reference books and find these two organizations.
She can check them out. I'm sure she will.
Yes.
Gwen, thank you.
1-800-423-TALK
is the phone. Larry is calling from Huron, South Dakota.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I wondered if the author has a chapter on John Lennon, as his song Imagine was a very powerful and is a very powerful influence on me, and I think my generation. And I also believe as the information age continues to advance, there is potential, if we could get out of the way of religion, for a brotherhood of man.
Larry, I'm happy to tell you that John Lennon and the song Imagine are in Larry Smith's book. Warren Smith's book.
Yes, and by the way, there are quite a few other musicians. Lennon's Imagine is one of his, like a hymn, if you'll excuse the word. But there are many other musicians, particularly the younger ones, who are blasting the theists, and who one that comes to mind is a group called XTC. It sounds like ecstasy, the drug. But there are other young musicians. Lennon is but one. I'm trying to think of others. Michael Callan, for example. Gilberto Gil from Barry Manilow, we did mention. But I've got like 40 or 50 musicians. There's a group called The Residents. I think there's a group called The Agnostics. Agnostic simply means, at least Huxley, when he invented the word, really simply means I don't know. You ask me what's going to happen tomorrow, I'm agnostic. I don't know. But he didn't use this to explain why he did or didn't believe in God. He just simply said, well, you bring up the subject of God. I don't know. I'm interested in what I'm going to have for lunch. I don't know about God. I want to know practical matters.
It's interesting also, I must say, that in your section on John Lennon, you also make note that Bob Dylan is a born-again Christian.
Yes.
So, listen, it's a big subject, and we've covered a good swath of it, Warren Smith. Thank you enormously, and thank you for this huge book, 10,000 entries in Warren Smith's compendium called Who's Who in Hell. Listeners, you can continue the conversation on our website at theconnectiononeword.org. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston.
You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. Someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one.
That's a nice one.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's the one I like best.
Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation. From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Girls, Women, and Money Conference for women who want to be financially literate and self-reliant. In Boston, September 21st through the 23rd, registration at edupr.com. And by the New England Mobile Book Fair.